Good morning and welcome to WJTN's The Times of Your Life. I'm Andrew Hill with Russ Dietrich, and we are here today to replay for you an interview that we featured on this very radio station on December 8th, 2018. Keith Martin, his mother Gloria, and Randy Anderson, the executive director from the Chautauqua County Sports Hall of Fame, were in the studio to talk about Keith, his family legacy, athletics, the Northwest Arena, his St. Susan Center fundraiser that he's been doing for many years. And we thought it was worth putting back on the air this morning to revisit some wonderful people and some wonderful stories, because that's what this show is all about. We will be back in the studio next week with Chad Eckloff from Eckloff's Bakery. But for today, we're going to go back in time. Keith Martin. An interview in the Times of Your Life from December 8th, 2018.
The first thing I said is, hey, Keith, come up. Let's talk about you. Let's talk about your life. Let's talk about, you know, the ice arena. Let's talk about your upcoming holiday haul. And you said, hey, can I bring Randy and let's talk about my dad? So good for you to say, you know, yeah, I'll do all that. But there's a reason I am who I am, and that's because of my parents. And I think it's great that you wanted to bring them into the mix here today. So I'm going to start with you and say good morning and take us back. When did this all start that you got this itch for sports?
Well, first of all, good morning, Andrew, Mr. Dietrich. That's the way we grew up. The reason, the time of my life has been sports and growing up and my sister Pam and my brother Kevin and I, that's where we grew up on the softball fields, was watching Dad. But there's even, you go back even further when Mr. Dietrich used to play with my dad and the stories back in those days. So the story of our lives in Jamestown Athletics goes back with Mr. Dietrich and my dad. There's a lot of special times for Chautauqua County in athletics with so many wonderful people that my dad was surrounded around.
I used to chase balls when we had batting practice with Kenny back in those years, and it got so tiring they bought me a bicycle because I had to go so far. I had to go so far to get the ball back.
And I can remember. Were you the pitcher at the time, Ron?
I can remember those days. And then there was another Martin that used to hang around and bounce a basketball. And Kenny used to sneak him in once in a while. A guy called Gordy.
Yep, Uncle Gordy.
He was awesome too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was a very good basketball player. And but back then, I think sports was a big part of a lot of people's lives. Mm-hmm. And that was something to do for... That was entertainment. That was right. All the entertainment a lot of people had back in the day.
Did you learn to play basketball like Gordy and your father on a basket on a telephone pole or on a pole along the street? Did you start that way?
Actually, Mr. Dietrich, our basketball hoop was on a tree, in our driveway. And it was an old dead tree and the basket hung. And the funny thing about that is as soon as I went away to college – and the grandkids came along, mom and dad's grandkids, Kevin's, my brother Kevin's kids came along. All of a sudden, there was a nice hoop on a metal pole, and there was a blacktop driveway. We played on a gravel driveway, so things change when grandkids come along. But we played on that hoop that was on a tree.
Was the basket always at 10 feet or maybe 9 or 11?
I think whatever the tree allowed it to be when it stayed up on that tree.
I remember a guy used to say they'd put a basket on a street light, on a street pole, and pretty soon somebody from the municipality would come along and say, geez, fellas, why are you using that pole? Look at the one across the street. It's got a light on it.
That's good.
So they would help him move it over there where the light was.
Nice.
Well, there was different times then. You could play, you know, basketball past dark and not be worried about anything. And now it's totally different. Either you're disturbing your neighbors, or you got to worry about all the weirdos out there, or you know, kids just aren't doing it. But let's not talk about that negative part of the loss today. Let's talk about the positives. And
Gloria, did you meet Kenneth on a basketball court or a baseball field in school or church or where?
Actually, we met at Midway Park. Okay. I was skating and he was watching.
Oh. You mean he wasn't a skater?
He became a skater.
Oh, became a skater.
Yeah. Well, he had to catch you, so he had to learn how to skate.
I guess.
That's wonderful. About what year was that? What grade? You guys were in high school or junior high school?
No, we were out of school.
Oh, you were out of school when that happened.
Yeah.
So what was it? What was it that brought you guys together? What was the attraction?
Gloria.
Well, we both like sports. I guess that's what it was. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense with the family tree the way it is. Absolutely.
So did you have a background in sports, Gloria?
I did play some sports in high school, yeah.
Well, Keith has told me that when he and his brother were growing up, you pitched batting practice in the backyard. Is that true?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, Dad was either playing ball or working. And Mom took Kevin and I out in the yard and threw batting practice to us.
Well, Gloria had two kinds of curves, didn't she?
Very good, Russ.
Come on, Russ.
You're making her blush.
Keith, what's your earliest memory of watching your dad?
And I think a lot of people back then was the social league and the fast pitch softball leagues. You know, the great games between Caesar House and Stravatos and all the Hall of Famers. I mean, the greatest, or one of the greatest pitchers of all time, and it is in the Chautauqua County Hall of Fame, is Jim Adamczyk, that pitched for Stravatos. And Dad played with other Hall of Famers. Bobby Schmidt was on the team back then. But we were talking the other day. My memories of going around that whole field and the names that played on those teams between Caesar House and Stravatos. Those men is how I believe Kevin and I learned how to play the game. And watching Dad play with those guys. And if you remember games at Danielson back in the day, they used to be 3-4 rows deep going down the foul lines and then out past the fences at Danielson for Stravatos games. There was well over 1,000 people to watch a fast pitch softball game back in the day.
Russ, weren't you the Parks and Rec director at that time period that Keith is talking about?
I had that pleasure, yes.
What's your recollection of
a lot what he's talking about and the great programs and the tournaments that we used to hold there, the open tournaments, and teams from all over the area would come in. And when it was time to pick most valuable player and pick all-stars, the name Martin surfaced very, very quickly. And that was most valuable player of the tournament. And, of course, Adamczyk was, as you're saying, was just awesome. He could pitch at any level. In fact, teams used to take him all over the country. And he would go pitch for teams in other tournaments and other playoffs. And I remember when the ball was just that little ball we used to play with. They call it a baseball. And your dad was an outstanding baseball player, one of the best shortstops. And in today's market, when the major leagues expanded, no doubt in my mind that Ken Martin would be played shortstop in the major leagues and would have been voted into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. He had that style. He had that ability. And he was Ken Martin. And I'm sure if he had been born at the time we are now, and come with the talent he had, he'd be in Cooperstown.
Do you think that comes down to the change in recruiting? Because now, I mean, you can recruit from halfway across the world.
A change in recruiting. Right now, like I said before, a while back I took a little inventory, unofficially, not audited, but about 85% of the Major League Baseball players are born offshore.
Wow.
And you go back in time in history, there might have been one or two played into major leagues. So that number has changed. And the number of teams have changed. When Kenny Martin and those guys were playing, what was there? There was just a few teams.
16
teams at the major league level. And now there's 16 million.
Wow.
So the competition has changed. But he was Cooperstown bound.
Gloria, Ken's nickname was Husker. or Husk.
Yeah. Husky.
I've never heard how he got that name. Can you explain that?
I don't know either.
It just came about. I have no idea. I'm sure there's probably somebody in Jamestown that knows that, but we just kept hearing it.
Russ, do you know?
Other than he was huskier than most of us, or more than all of us. He was a very, 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 very well-built young man, and I wouldn't be surprised to come from that. Maybe somebody in the press box says, now batting Kenny Martin, look at that husky guy out there. It wouldn't surprise me a bit, but I couldn't testify in court.
Well, if there's somebody out there, because our listeners know everything, so if somebody out there knows, feel free to give us a call here today, 483-8255, 483-8255. If we can get down to the meaning behind that, that'd be fantastic.
Keith, what's the athletic path you walked on from the time Mother was throwing batting practice in the backyard till today?
Well, I grew up playing the normal sports, baseball, basketball, I was a very average player growing up. I was a lot like my dad, smaller in stature in high school. I graduated high school 5'9", 135 pounds from Faulkner.
Wow.
But my senior year, things turned around athletically for me in baseball. And I was very fortunate to play in the Babe Ruth World Series in 1984 here at your park. And my senior year, I had a pretty good year. And Tom Prohaska and Bob Burns came up to me at the Babe Ruth World Series and asked if I'd like to join the team at Jamestown Community College. And things went well for me there, and I'm a firm believer everything happens for a reason. And there was a gentleman that came into town to coach the basketball team for 1 year. His name was Pete Broca. There was some transition in coaching at Jamestown Community College at that time, and he was only here for 6 months. And I still say this to this day, the only reason why he came to Jamestown was for me, because he had contacts on the East Coast, and I was recruited by a few East Coast teams, UMass and Eastern Connecticut I visited, because Mr. Broca was a college umpire on the East Coast. He had come from the Coast Guard Academy. And so he had contacts out on the East Coast, and I went and visited. And back then, when you have a dream of playing professional baseball, just like my dad, who played in the New York Giants minor league system, and my brother, who was drafted by the Detroit Tigers in the sixth round out of high school, you try and keep that dream alive as long as you can. And I thought if I went to the East Coast, I'd have a better shot of playing in the Cape League. And back in the 80s, that was the way that you got into the pros, basically, if you didn't get drafted out of high school. So Eastern Connecticut State University is about an hour away from the Cape. And they had already won a national championship and played in the World Series the year before in 86 when I was being recruited. And I said, let me give it a try. I ended up going to Eastern Connecticut State University, played there for 2 years, was fortunate enough to play in a College World Series in 1987. End of my senior year, my head coach says, why don't you stay on and coach? And was very fortunate to coach and win a national championship in 1990. We went back to the College World Series in 1993. But when you're a assistant coach at a Division III school, it doesn't pay the bills. So I had to find a full-time position, and that's when we built an outdoor sports complex just outside of Hartford, Connecticut. But I stayed in coaching with a local high school, and then in 1999, I come back home, and my career at Jamestown Community College started, and I was there for 19 years as head women's basketball coach, assistant baseball coach, and then athletic director.
Wow. Keith, that's quite a trip.
Before we get to your JCC years, I want to talk about your coach at Eastern Connecticut. The rumor is he was kind of a hard-nosed disciplinarian kind of a guy.
Yeah.
Do you have any stories that would illustrate the kind of a guy you were playing for and later worked for?
Well, I've said this. I'm very grateful that I had Tom Prohaska as a college coach first. Because Coach Prohaska was a military man, was very structured, very demanding, outstanding coach. If I would not have had him, I could have never survived at Eastern Connecticut. Coach Holowaty, who is nationally known, he's been National Coach of the Year, has won over 1,400 games in his college career, was very tough on us. And the story you're talking about, I know what story you want to hear. He couldn't do it in today's world. I'll just say that. We were playing, it was my senior year, and we had just beaten John Hopkins, Division I team. And we were on our way down south for our spring trip. Got done with the game. We beat a Division I team. We go to the hotel. Curfew's at 12. Some of the players were not back in the hotel at 12:01. You hear that knock on the door when you are in your room. And you see 30 young men in their shorts and T-shirts. And if they had that on, running in the parking lot at 12 midnight. You get the... You get the message that we're leaving for North Carolina the next day to play North Carolina Wesleyan. We had practice. We get there. We have an hour practice. We're all grinning. We think, oh, coach is okay with all this. Not so much. he says, get your shoes on. You're running back to the hotel. 6.5 miles.
Wow.
Be back in an hour.
Wow.
And we start running, and we get back to the hotel, and coach says, okay, tomorrow morning, I want to see so-and-so's room and Martin's room. Well, Martin was a senior on that team. Well, we had freshmen on the team that didn't make curfew. So everyone that didn't make curfew, whoever was responsible for those kids had to run. So 5 o'clock the next morning, our room and the other room got back on that major highway. And I'm talking four to six lane highway in North Carolina. We ran back that 6.5 miles back to the field.
Oh my gosh.
So we ran 13 miles in less than 12 hours. I don't think you can do that today. but it taught us something. And then we all had to be bat boys and ball boys. We could not play in that the next game.
Wow.
And here we are, we're seniors, there's scouts, there's pro scouts at every one of our games, and we're missing an opportunity. So you learned a lesson, and that's my Coach Holowaty story. Then I end up, and then like I said, I ended up, he asked me to be on his coaching staff, and 2 years later we win a national championship, and one of the greatest memories of my life. And then we talk about growing up. I mean, I tell this story. Mom and my family know this. Actually, Kevin saw it one night in bed. I was dreaming. And I woke up, and I was coaching, and I was telling a guy to get down. And this is back when Dad was playing. So it must have been when I was 11, 12 years old. And I was coaching. I was telling the person to slide. In 1993, I'm coaching in the College World Series, and I'm coaching third and telling people to slide and get down. And it's just like, how many years later, you dream those dreams, and then they come to fruition. And I'm very blessed of my career.
I can remember another story of your father. He was, you know, he was an outstanding scorer in basketball in high school, and played for the Red Raiders. And Jamestown was playing a team that was coming out of the eastern part of the state. It was, I think they were champions. And one of their players was a leading scorer, or near the leading scorer, in the state. And Mr. Taft told your father that he would not be shooting the ball during this ball game. His responsibility was to guard that player. And he held that player, I think, very close to single digits. And Jamestown went on to win that ball game. So, you know, he could play with the ball in his hand or the ball without having it in his hands. Outstanding. And I'm thinking about Kenny Gengory. Did he play ball, Army or military ball in Japan?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So he had that opportunity too, didn't he?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was in Korea.
In Korea. Mm-hmm. And that's where the probably the scouts really got to take a look at him from the Giants and other places.
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Keith, I think you've told a story about your dad in the past and his Korea baseball experience when he was serving in the U.S. Army, but he was playing on an elite team in Korea and had an amazing experience. Can you share that story?
Yeah, he was in 1954. He was playing for Signal 22 division of the U.S. Army team over in Seoul, South Korea. And we didn't find out this story until a couple years ago. But Dad was playing in a stadium. There was 15,000 South Koreans, all dressed in white. And one of those 15,000 was Sigmund Rhee. And the story that we were told a couple years ago was that with all the fans dressed in white, you could not see the ball come off the bat. And the players and the pitcher could not see the ball, the white ball coming off the bat, and it was very difficult to play. That story came from a gentleman that contacted my dad after they had not seen each other since 1954. And this man contacted my dad, I want to say like 5 years ago, 2 years before my dad passed away. He was in Texas all his life, found Dad on the internet, and was going to Niagara Falls and wanted to reconnect with my dad after all these years.
Wow.
And they did. My dad called us up. We went up to the house, and we met this gentleman, and he told us that story. My dad never told us the story. And that was Dad. He didn't talk much about his playing days and his career and, you know, the one story he was very proud of is when he had to try out at the Polo Grounds and Leo DeRocher. And we did know that story. And the baseball that was in his sock drawer that was never encased in glass, that was signed by Monty Irvin and Leo DeRocher. And, you know, but he never really talked about those things. We did know about the Polo Grounds. The story about us playing in Seoul, South Korea, we found out from another teammate.
You know, your father, in judgment, not by title, but he played in Major League Baseball. When I think back of the semi-pro league that we had in Jamestown during that period of time, with guys like your father and George Parr, I could go on for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the fellows that played for the professional Jamestown Falcons here in town come back and made Jamestown their home, and they played in that semi-pro league. So that semi-pro league was rated well across the country. And they used to go to a lot of national tournaments in Wichita and Youngstown, Ohio, and Gloria smiling with that one. And they played baseball at the major league level in those tournaments and places.
Yeah, Mom and I are just laughing because that was Mom's only vacation. we never went on a vacation, and Mom and Dad got on a train, right? And they went to Hutchinson, Kansas, Wichita, Kansas, and they got on a train and went out there, and Dad played a Blue Moon Odom. Remember the pitcher for the Oakland A's? Yeah. He played in that tournament.
Wow.
Back in the day, but. Yeah, we laugh, but That's serious. We did not have a vacation except to go to the ballpark. When Dad played in McKeesport, Pennsylvania, fast pitch softball tournaments, going to Pittsburgh after work. Now, that's the other thing. Dad never missed. Yeah. He missed 3 days of work in 43 years of working tool and die.
Wow.
We always went to tournaments after he got out of work. And vacations were not a part of our but you know what? It was the greatest vacations in the world to watch my dad play.
They used to go down nights and play in the basketball tournament at Brookville, Pennsylvania. They go down after work and come back late in the morning and hurry up and get ready to go to work, didn't they, Gloria?
Yes.
Oh, Jack Fulford and Dad used to drive down. They used to get out of work at 5 o'clock, leave, and they'd have a 55-minute drive, and they had 50 minutes to get there down in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
They got there by game time. Stories Jack Fulford and Dad used to tell.
Yeah. There's another major leaguer by the name of Jack Fulford. He was awesome. And he played with Kenny regularly.
We're talking with Keith Martin, Gloria Martin, Randy Ashton is here, and of course, I'm Andrew. This is Russ, and this is the Times of Your Life, and we brought everybody here today to talk about wonderful stories. I have to ask, though, the 3 days that your dad missed work, what were those 3 days?
Well, the two was Grandpa's, his dad's funeral, right? Grandpa Martin's funeral, and the other day he had, I think he had surgery on his mouth or something.
I was just scared. That would have bothered me all week.
Yeah. But yeah.
That's why I host the show.
But you know what? And like, for me not to even remember the other day, I mean, that's how.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Wow.
Okay, Keith, now you left off at, you were at Eastern Connecticut and you were an assistant baseball coach and you were running a sports park. Tell us a little bit about that sports park that you were running in Hartford.
When you're an assistant coach, as I alluded to, my salary was $1,500 a year as an assistant Division III coach.
Like he worked in radio, Andrew.
That's a joke.
So you have to find ways to create revenue for yourself. And back in the day, I was playing softball, and I would go play on the weekends. Of course, I would do camps during the summertime and get paid that way. But I would do camps Monday through Friday during the days and such in the night, and then leave Friday afternoon and go play in softball tournaments around the country and make a little money that way. There were some of these sports complex, softball complex, being built around the country. And a gentleman approached me and asked me if I would like to be a part of one just outside of Hartford, Connecticut. So at that time, I decided, it was time for me to see if a full-time position in athletics would be something for me. And we built it from scratch. It was a $3 million sports complex just outside of Hartford, Connecticut, in Vernon, Connecticut. And it had four lit softball fields, four beach volleyball courts, 12 horseshoe pits, and, of course, a beer garden in the middle. Wherever you have softball, you need a beer garden. So we built that, and we opened that up in the spring of 1993. Mm. And so it just so happens that was my last year of coaching at Eastern Connecticut. I coached in the College World Series, and then that was the last game I ever coached at Eastern.
Keith, with this long and full career that you've participated in, how has things changed in the youth and in the community athletic programs?
I think Randy and I were talking about this. We were talking about Hall of Famers people back in the day in my career, and just in my career, the technology has changed so much that so many men and women that played sports back in the day didn't have the technology that the kids do today. Some of the records that are being broken It's a big change because you guys that played with the wood bat, that's a difficult thing to do. I came into an era where the bat was really hot. The ball trampolined off the bat, and in the 80s, Pete Incaviglia and Robin Ventura broke all the hitting records in the Division I NCAAs at the time I was in college. Mm-hmm. And that the most home runs ever hit in the Division I College World Series was in the late 80s. And the technology was so great, the records will never be broken. So I think that's something to do with the change. But I think the question that you're asking is, are things changing for kids getting involved in sports, and how is it different now? We grew up bouncing a ball. We grew up, you know, throwing a ball around the backyard. You don't see that as much anymore, unfortunately. I think the backyard games are losing an interest in our society today, and I think that that's unfortunate. And I think there's kids out there that we miss because I think I just look at it in a sense that today's society is geared so much towards the travel or the successful teams that we don't look at the masses and create enough games and opportunities for the number of kids that should be participating, where we don't know where a 9 or a 10 or 11 or a 12-year-old is going to be when they're seniors in high school. And we get locked in on one sport. But if a travel team for baseball, a travel team for volleyball, a travel team for basketball. But we don't know when that young person is 10, 11, 12, what their body's going to be like when they're seniors in high school. And I think of my dad. I mean, he grew 5 inches from his senior year, and then before, when he came back from the military, after he was 18 years old. I'll say four inches. I grew 5 inches after high school. So the point I'm trying to make is, I think we get locked in on these specialty teams when they're so young. And I think that's a change, where back in the day, people played 3, 4, 5 sports, and they tried them all.
Yeah.
And
now they have to pick.
And now, because of these travel teams, they're picking. Exactly, Andrew. And I think that's a big change in today's sports.
We have about 20 minutes to go here, and while you're on that note, that's one thing as we're moving on. I'm going to skip a couple years of your career. I know Randy's going to take us back in a little bit. But I want to set the tone now that you were at the Northwest Arena. So now you've talked about basketball, baseball, softball. Now you are literally surrounded every day by hockey and figure skating, and something I know your daughter's involved with, and the figure skating part. But now, have you had to look at youth sports and youth activities a little differently now in the last month since you've been realistically in charge of taking one of these huge multi-million-dollar projects in a city like Jamestown, New York, and giving it get some blood going through it and some energy to it?
In my mind, athletics is all the same. And those young people that are figure skating, those young people that are ice skating, it's what they're striving to be and what their future. They would love to be that NHL player. They would love to be on Disney on Ice with our figure skaters. So if I can help one person and promote that one person to that dream in this new position, that would be the greatest job in the world. And I'm looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to what is growing at Northwest Arena and the opportunities that we're having. And last night's game, Andrew, you and I were talking before. What a wonderful atmosphere last night for the Rebels game. Over 1,100 spectators, Probably between 450 teddy bears thrown out on the ice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God,
it was an unbelievable sight. Yeah. And you know where it came from, Andrew?
Where's that?
The people of Jamestown and Chautauqua County came out
yep.
to support athletics. And you could say it's hockey, but it's all athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful to see. And I'm sure everyone felt a part of last night. The energy in that building was wonderful.
Absolutely.
Keith, why are the athletic programs in Chautauqua County so effective and so popular and so well played and so well organized? Is that unusual, or is that the same thing on every square foot of earth in the on this globe we live on?
It's a great question.
It's a great question, but I think the person asking it is the answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful people like you and Mr. Dietrich and those high, Little League coaches and the Babe Ruth coaches and the Little Hoopers coaches that have grown up in this area. And sports has been such a big part of all our lives in our community that it's just handed down to, I'll say, all of us, because mm-hmm. I'm the next generation. Yeah. Of people like you that gave us those games and gave us that education about sports. And now you see children and grandchildren of those generations handing the love of sports down of those backyard games. And so you look at the success of JCC volleyball. They're all Chautauqua County kids.
Yep.
And where do they come from? They come from towns like Randolph.
Mm-hmm.
They come from towns Lakewood. They come from towns Little Valley. All those little small towns, and they are the best in the country at the junior college level. It's because of that coaching and that background of the love of sports we have in Chautauqua and Cattaraugus County.
And we're talking about sports and everything, but I was waiting for the time to arrive to start the Times of Your Life. We were listening to Dennis Webster on the morning breakfast program with the a cappella choir and all of that. And the music program and the band program and the orchestra programs and all of those kinds mm-hmm. of programs that are on the edge or outside of the classroom in Chautauqua County are just staggering to me.
And we were talking about how lucky it is that people grow up within this community that are talented. They could go anywhere, and how many times do they come back when they could go anywhere and they choose to come back, whether it be for a job or exactly. So then when you come back, Keith Martin, and you start coaching, you know, the women's basketball team at JCC, and I mean, that's got to be so rewarding as a coach. Like you were just talking off as the spinoff of these young people who you have an influence on.
Absolutely. And I think about all my student athletes that have blessed and touched my life. I've gotten a lot more from them than they've gotten from me. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. But you talk about coming back for reasons and people. There's a Hall of Famer in Chautauqua County Hall of Fame. Lori Franchina. I was playing high school basketball, and she was a sixth grader or something like that, and she used to sit behind our bench. Coach Strickland, I would take my uniform or my warm-up top off, and she would fold my uniform or warm-up top.
Huh.
And this young woman has a successful high school career. I bring my roommate, who was the head softball coach from Eastern Connecticut State University and the winner of 4 national championships, back to Chautauqua County. He says, "Don't tell me who she is." We were at a volleyball game at Maple Grove, and he goes, "That's her."
Wow.
She ends up coming to Eastern Connecticut State University and playing at our university on our softball and women's basketball teams, plays in 2 or 3 national championships between basketball and softball, and ends up being inducted into Chautauqua County Sports Hall of Fame. Hmm. She's in the softball Hall of Fame and had a wonderful career at Eastern Connecticut State University. but it does come full circle. And people that you run into in your lifetime, later on you run into them again. And I've been very fortunate.
Oh, you're very kind as you keep passing the ball to everybody else. And it makes me stop and think of playing in the backyards. Two names come to me very quickly along from a group of thousands. Russ Eklund and Jack Fulford were great basketball, baseball, softball, football players and participants in the backyards and even at the school level. And what happened in their lives? They turned into be two of the most outstanding officials of basketball and football and baseball in the county, with a lot of other guys. But that all started playing in the backyard. And they've taken that career and that love and that expertise to the officiating level. And I think officiating level is a very important fabric, part of the fabric of athletics.
Absolutely. And those back then, those officials were also coaches
mm-hmm.
out on the floor. They used to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like
when
Parky.
I was... Parky? Yeah, absolutely. Lyle Parkhurst was unbelievable at that. He would come out to the mound and rub the ball and give the pitcher a suggestion or two because he had so much knowledge as a former professional pitcher. That he played so many years, but then he umpired for so many years, and he was a coach that was an umpire.
I interrupted your flow of thought, but you experienced that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You'd be out on the field and Parky would just walk over to you and give you a little suggestion. And you think about the hundreds and thousands of people that were athletes in our community that gave back and had such a background and the people they played with and the experiences they had.
Did Eklund do that on the basketball court?
Well, Mr. Eklund, he probably called more fouls on me than gave me suggestions. So.
Better known as Whitey.
Yeah.
And Jack Fulford on football. Outstanding.
Keith, when it came to coming back to coach and you were at JCC and you had to go from this big history and playing with the guys, and then you end up being the coach of a women's basketball team. That had to have been one heck of a adjustment for you, or I shouldn't say adjustment, but challenge in a good way.
I was probably one of when I was in Connecticut. UConn women's basketball was just starting. Geno had just been hired, and Jim Calhoun had just been hired right when I got there in '86, and then UConn women's basketball blew up and mm-hmm. turned into the machine that they are today. So I had some background of women's basketball, but I really didn't have that much of it. But when I was interviewing for the job at JCC, I said, I'm going to coach women's basketball just like I coach our men's team. And mm-hmm. I said, because women at this level want to be coached.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so blessed to have so many women that just gave everything. They would those kids would run through a wall for me
mm-hmm.
and the program. And I just like UConn women's basketball, JCC women's basketball blew up and turned into something very special. And George and Travis has continued that success, and I'm very proud of that.
You know, Andrew, I'm sitting here looking and listening, and my eyes keep looking through this glass, and they keep drifting over mm-hmm. to Gloria.
Mm-hmm.
And I see Gloria hasn't taken her eyes off that young man 2 seconds while she's in here. You must be extremely proud of that young man, Gloria.
I am. I'm proud of all my children.
Yeah. Pam and Kevin and I are so very, very blessed to be the children of Ken and Gloria Martin, and we have a wonderful family.
And there's part of being a great coach and a great part of the community is when you experience things and pass it on and forward it on, like you're going to be doing here with the Holiday Hall, which I want to point out and talk about in a minute. But first, I want to go back really quick to JCC about there's a lot of things coaches experience, national championships, you know, losing seasons. But when it comes to tragedy that happens on your roster, you had that in your career at JCC, and I think that is something that I want to bring up because not every coach can go through what you went through with Amanda Rice. Can you talk about that a little bit as we're talking about the times of your life, and not everybody can experience and shouldn't and hopefully doesn't experience what you did, but I think it's important because it was a big story here in the community.
Yeah, back now, 2002, You talk about highs and lows all in a matter of weeks or minutes. We were having a successful season, and Amanda Rice was a player of ours between 2001 and 2003, and then in 2007 we were ending our season. Undefeated season in the region. We finished the regular season. I dropped the team off, and on that Saturday, and then that next Monday morning, I get a phone call from one of the moms, alumni moms, and said Amanda's been hurt in a car accident, and everything stops, and. That was the week of the regionals. Like I said, we were undefeated that season, and that meant nothing.
Right.
Amanda's car accident changed everything. I went to WCA. They flew her to Erie Hammett. She was in a coma. But the story I tell, when I got to the hospital, they let me in, mm-hmm. only the family, and they let Coach Martin in, and her being in a coma, I said, Amanda, I'm here, and a tear came out of her right eye, and I said, I know she's in there,
mm-hmm.
I know she's in there, and for the next 6 months, she was in that coma, and I went every day. To Erie, would go to practice, would drive back and forth, drive to Buffalo. Then she got transported to Buffalo. I drove back and forth to Buffalo every day. And then this community came together for her and her family. And the fundraiser that was held at JCC that June was one of the greatest success stories out of a bad situation that I could have ever thought of.
Mm-hmm.
We received hockey sticks from Wayne Gretzky, Troy Aikman, footballs from Troy Aikman, just all over the racing world. Kyle Petty sent stuff, and that night was very special in the start of the healing for the Rice family. And Amanda's doing well. She you know, has her limitations still, but every year she came to our basketball games and watched us, and you know, she's still in there and she's working hard, and her family, God bless them, they work hard with her every day, and she is a part of the Jayhawk family, and we have a big family in our women's mm-hmm. basketball program, but it was just something that you go through where you say sports takes a back seat,
mm-hmm.
you know. And that's okay. Sports is there to lift us up, but it's also to be put in perspective of what's important.
And as a coach, I know you end up always being coach and a father figure and a friend and, you know, an all around, you know, important part of a person's life for any level of sport. You're always coach. I still call all my coaches coach. And,
yep, so
you
do
know,
I. So
mean,
do I.
That's just, that's the way it is. And I hope that's the way it continues to be. I want to turn really quick to the Holiday Hall, if we could, really quick, because that's part of giving back to the community and, you know, you're going to be at the cycle shop again. This is the fifth year?
Sixth.
This is the sixth year. And you're going to be there this upcoming weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And tell us really quick, I know you've been on with Dennis, and you know, we're going to talk this week with updates, but for anybody that has not heard, you're going to be braving the weather, whatever weather is brought to us, and tell us why.
St. Susan serves is on pace to serve over 120,000 meals this year. And when I got out of the coaching, I wanted to find something to give back to the community. And I thought St. Susan's was the a situation that needed to be brought to the attention of the community. And so what I just started to do, utilizing my family, my brother-in-law, Jim Pullen at Jamestown Mattress, and my friend Randy Marsh at the Jamestown Cycle Shop, and our friends the Saxons at Jamestown Awning, to stand outside for 3 days and collect food and supplies and monetary donations for St. Susan's. Last year, we raised over 4.5 tons of food and supplies, and over $14,000. Excuse me. And that has gone on for 5 years now. So you put all that together, our community has been just wonderful. Unfortunately, the need continues to grow. And so, as a coach, I want to win. And winning means one more pound than we did last year, and one more dollar than we did last year. So I'm asking the community to come out and support us. Just drive right up to the Jamestown Mattress truck. I'll be standing outside from 6 in the morning to 6 o'clock at night, Thursday and Friday, and then from 8 in the morning till 3 o'clock on Saturday, when we hopefully drive that full truck over to St. Susan's at 3 o'clock. And it's real easy. You just drive by and open up your window, and we take it out and put it in the truck or put it in our bucket.
Now, how often in the last 5 years has mom drove up to give you a hot cocoa or to make sure you're okay?
Every year they come down, and it's very fun. And I see a lot of the same people every year, and it's wonderful that just drive up. And we're excited about this year. We look forward to it. A lot of people do. You know, they ask me, are you going to do it? And with my change in jobs, people were concerned, would I do it again? And absolutely. This isn't about me. This is all about St. Susan's and the wonderful work they do. And it's just spreading their message and helping them make someone's day a little better with respect. And that's what they do. They make the people that walk in their doors day a little better and do it with respect.
Randy, as you gather the information and the history of sports in Chautauqua County, does this young man and all the things and people he's talking about surprise you?
Not at all, Russ. I sit in here thinking about all the connections that we all have. Everybody in this room is connected to everybody else in this room. And that connection is sports.
Yeah.
Keith was talking about Amanda Rice. Amanda Rice was a student in my class in third grade. One more connection. A person that Keith hired to be his assistant athletic director at Jamestown Community College was Angela Pucciarelli. Angela Pucciarelli is marrying Amanda Rice's brother this coming May. Think about all these connections that we just put together on that simple level there.
Yeah, Amanda was coaching Angela's team. That's when she got hurt in 2007.
And when did you graduate, Falconer, Keith?
I graduated – can I remember that far back? It was 1984.
Was my dad the
– He was the physician.
So my dad was the doctor. Physician for Falconer.
See that connection, Andrew? That's what we're talking about.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure for me to know the Martin family. I knew Kenny. Gloria has been a wonderful supporter of the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame. Keith is on the board at the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame. His sister Pam and her husband Jim are great supporters of the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame. We have established a Ken Martin Legacy Award at the Sports Hall of Fame. The Martin family annually honors the most outstanding high school baseball player in Chautauqua County in memory of Ken Martin. It's all these connections that just make this so wonderful.
We can go on for a long time, Russ.
Yes, we can.
But unfortunately, we have run out of time again this week. But I'll tell you, this was a home run when it comes to guests coming in here. And Keith and Gloria and Randy, thank you for making this morning so wonderful. It was a great morning to start. But after the show each week, when we have people like this in here, Russ, I just can't help but leave the studios smiling and knowing we got great people and great futures, you know, in people's hands.
Absolutely.
Again, that was a program from December 8th, 2018 here on WJTN and the Times of Your Life that we thought was worthy of getting some airplay this morning. Next week, we're going to be featuring an interview with Chad Eckloff from Eckloff's Bakery. We're going to talk about that amazing heritage that's been in the Jamestown area, the history behind the pink stripe cookie, and more recently the tarp skunk cookie. And also in future shows, we're going to be having some wonderful folks that love living, working, and recreating in this area. So stay tuned for more great interviews here on WJTN and the Times of Your Life, which is brought to you this morning by our friends at Lena's Pizza. And there's a reason that they've been in business for so long. It's because of the ingredients. They're fresh. They are never frozen. It is fresh, never frozen. I don't know if I can say that enough times. Fresh, never frozen ingredients. And you can tell the difference. Whether it be pizza, chicken fingers, the jumbo chicken wings, just a side salad, Lena's Pizza's got you covered. They will definitely do a great job to curb that hunger you might have. The sausage, mushroom, onions, bacon, the sweet green peppers, the hot peppers, jalapenos, pineapple, anchovies, Hawaiian pizza, chicken wing pizza, white pizza. How about that cauliflower crust they do? Yeah, a gluten-free option for you. Lena's Pizza at 902 East 2nd Street in Jamestown. Call ahead 484-0600, 484-0600 for pizza, wings, as well as chicken fingers, cheese sticks, deep-fried veggies. Lena's Pizza is proud to bring you the Times of Your Life on WJTN, as is Rainer's Liquor Store. Brand new item in stock, it is Blood Orange Liquor. The original and naturally intense flavor of Sicilian Blood Orange. One of their customers said, hey, you should get this in, and they did. What else does Rainer Liquor have right now? Brown Sugar Bourbon. You can stop in and get yours today. They've got the Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey for you. They've got the Manhattans. They have the Old Finnish cocktails for you, the peanut butter and salty caramel whiskey. Of course, wines, local wine, regional wine. They have got, of course, for you as well, national and international wines of all types for all occasions. Stop on by our friends at Rainer's Liquor Store in Fluvanna Avenue in Jamestown. Tell them Andrew and Russ sent you from the Times of Your Life. The nights are getting cooler, and sometimes you just want to sit back, relax, listen to some timeless music, some light rock favorites on WJTN or Our American Stories or the Times of Your Life. And just relax. You can also call ahead if you'd like to see if they have what you're looking for in stock at 664-4503. That's 664-4503. Rainer's Liquor Store, proud to bring you the Times of Your Life this morning on WJTN Jamestown.